The roundup continues on Monday afternoon with the fourth episode in our series, Test Drive. All six written by the award-winning playwright Dave Carley. They star Gordon Pinsent as Earl Hughes, an American Motors car dealer whom we follow over five decades. This week's episode of Test Drive is set in 1976. The Montreal Olympics are in full swing, and Nadia Comaneci is about to receive her perfect tens in gymnastics. Earl and Dorothy are driving to Montreal in their new Pacer wagon, but that doesn't mean it's a smooth ride. Here now is September Song, Episode 4 of Test Drive, by Dave Carley.
If I could have one wish for the stories I'm telling you, I really wish they could all be funny. Or failing that, uplifting, instructional. So that at the end of these 6 weeks, you'd pause and think about my life and hopefully conclude I wasn't such a bad fellow to spend all that time with. And then the airwaves would go silent and we'd go our separate ways. You back to your rich and vibrant lives and me to wherever it is that moldy old car salesmen go. Unfortunately, not everything in life is funny. Only some of it is uplifting, and very little is ever instructional. I'm Earl, Earl Hughes. I sell cars. I don't sell as many as my wife, Dorothy. Dodo could sell a rusty Rambler to Henry Ford. We own an American Motors dealership, Dorothy Curran, AMC, on Eglinton Avenue East in Toronto. It's smack dab in the middle of that long strip of car dealers, malls, and fast food restaurants they optimistically call the Golden Mile. And this year, 1976, we're trying to unload a lot full of Gremlins, Hornets, Jeeps, Matadors, and those weird bubble-shaped Pacers. Most days, you'd find Dorothy and me in the showroom. But unfortunately, things are different now. And that's why Dodo and I are driving down the 401 to Montreal, testing out a new Pacer station wagon, heading to the Montreal Olympics to celebrate our 30th wedding anniversary. And I wish I could tell you everything is peachy in that little Pacer. But it's not. For starters, even though I'm trying not to let it show, my heart is breaking.
And furthermore, I'm worried about the inventory.
Not now, Dode.
Well, if we're not going to worry about it now, then when? We've got 150 unsold cars on that lot, Earl. Nothing's moving. So what are we doing? We're traipsing off to the Olympics like we don't have a care in the world.
The cars will all get sold eventually.
But that's just it. What if they don't? For starters, we've got 55 Pacers. They sold like hotcakes last year, but now the thrill is gone. Nobody wants to buy a space buggy with, let's admit it, lousy gas mileage. And are you noticing? So damn much glass that even with the air conditioning on full blast, it's like driving in an oven.
Well, if you're hot, there's ice water in the thermos.
Earl, listen to me. The handwriting's on the wall.
What handwriting?
The dealership is doomed. American Motors is doomed. We thought the Pacer would save us, but it's not. There's no room for an independent car maker anymore. GM, Ford, Chrysler, we can't compete with them. And all those Japanese cars flooding in?
Ah, they're a flash in the pan.
Earth to Earl, the Japanese are here to stay. And I seem to recall you said that Volkswagen was just a fad, too. Oh.
Dodo?
I'm okay.
No, you're not. You're...
Promise me you'll sell the dealership before you have to give it away. Promise me.
But the kids, where will they work?
I've talked it over with Speedy, and she agrees with me. And besides, her heart's not really in the car business.
But Dan's a car man.
Our son-in-law is not a car man. He's a mechanic. Dan's a great mechanic, but he couldn't sell a car to save his life. Lord, he can barely drive them. And Franklin, our son and only male heir, Franklin doesn't care. He just says the Lord will see us through. What the hell kind of business plan is that? The Lord will see us into bankruptcy. That's where he'll see us.
Franklin's very sincere about his conversion.
I preferred him when he was a surfer. Oh. If you sell soon, you can get enough money to start up some other business they can all work at. What, I don't know. We're going to have to give this some serious thought. Franklin's gone religious, Dan can't drive, and Speedy won't stop reading. You know what she's reading now? Some book that says she's okay. She's okay, I'm okay, the whole world is okay.
Oh, Toto.
I'm just a bit hot. It was a mistake to take a pacer.
You wanted to test drive the wagon. Hey, why don't we stop a while? Let's get off the next exit, go sit by the lake. There's a beach at Coburg. Let's stop there, okay, Dodo?
I would love some ice cream.
See? And I'd love to buy you some.
We pulled off the 401 at Coburg and drove down to the waterfront. I helped Dodo over to a bench. We sat looking out at Lake Ontario. Then gradually the breeze off the lake cooled her down. And then, as if on cue, an ice cream truck jingled up and I bought her an Eskimo pie.
Oh, this is the life.
You know, we don't need to drive any further. We could stay right here in Coburg. There's a hotel just down the street. The Breakers, we could check in.
No, it's Montreal or bust. We've had our tickets for a year and we're using them, come hell or high water. Earl?
Hmm?
Well, it might just be the morphine, but I swear I'm hearing music.
You are. There's a band shell back there.
You know, this is a nice little town. I always thought I'd retire to one of these nice little towns. A beach, lawn bowlers, normal kids, ice cream trucks, just when you need them. A band shell in the park.
You can't stand it outside the city.
Where are you going?
I'll be right back.
Earl!
I'd had one of my little brain waves. I get them every now and then. They always have something to do with Dodo. When she was well, the brain waves were how to avoid getting in touch with her. But now they're less about making my life easier and more about making hers a little less painful.
Okay, that's done that.
What's done what?
Okay, fellas.
Listen to this. So, can you hear it?
I'm not deaf.
It's our song. Do you remember when we first heard September Song?
No.
The Palais Royal, May 1939. Our grand formal. I was a shy, gentlemanly 18-year-old. You were all over me.
Oh, you are such a liar. Was I really all over you?
No, but I sure wanted you to be.
I thought you said you couldn't dance.
I can't. I mean, I never have before.
What do you mean you never have?
I never danced before. You must have noticed I got two left feet.
Oh, you are such a liar.
No, honest. Just in front of the mirror.
This is your first dance.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, I suppose I should be honored. Well, I would be honored, except for the fact I had to ask you.
What?
This is the part where you say, "Oh, Dorothy, I'm really glad you did."
Well, I am. I'm also kind of surprised. Why did you?
Because you doodle in algebra.
You asked me to the formal because I doodle in algebra?
Because of what you doodle. If you'd been doodling Betty Grable's legs, I'd have headed for the hills, but you were drawing cars, Nash's. I had no choice but to ask you out. Hey, look, there's a ship.
That's hardly a ship. That's the night ferry to Rochester. Last summer, I worked on the day one.
I've always worked at Dad's dealership.
Oh, you're lucky.
Yeah, I am. What'd you do on the ferry?
I loaded the cars on and washed them. Sometimes even if they didn't ask.
You really love cars, don't you?
Yeah.
So do I. I practically grew up at the dealership. I sold my first car at 14. Honest. I mean, Dad helped and he came along for the test drive, but I did all the talking. Earl, just so you know, I don't make a practice of asking boys to formals. If there's any more asking to be done, you're doing it.
But there isn't another formal this year. Oh, sorry. Do you mean you want me to ask you something else?
That's exactly what I mean.
Do you want a drink?
No, I don't want a drink. Okay, I guess I'm going to have to hint. It's a moonlit night. We're on a pier on a lake with a moon, and music is drifting over the water, and there's nobody nearby.
You've lost me.
Oh, How can you be so dense? Come here.
Wow. Okay, now I understand.
Earl?
You want another?
First, answer a question. Did you agree to come with me to the dance because I'm incredibly pretty and fun, or because you knew I'd show up in Daddy's brand new Nash? And before you answer, honesty is not always the best policy. Not if you want a second kiss. So what was it, Earl? Me or the car?
You. It was you.
Hey, what did I say now?
You were supposed to say the car.
Oh!
Honesty is, in fact, the best policy. Especially if you're married to a woman with radar. I never got away with anything with Dodo. Partly that was because she worked with me at Curran AMC, always within ear and eye shot. But she really did have a sixth sense for the truth. And I have to confess, I was very interested in her old man's car. I'd seen her drive it to school. She was the only student at Riverdale with wheels. It was a 1939 Nash, a mammoth eight-cylinder bruiser, flashy new square headlights, built right into the fender. Custom two-tone paint job. I must have looked like a sultan as she drove me to that formal, and I felt like an emperor when she let me drive her back home. That old Nash was a heck of a lot more car than the little Pacer we were waddling off to Montreal in. The Pacer's air conditioning wasn't kicking in, so we pulled over again, just outside Kingston.
Are you sure you want to go on? We could stop here. Take one of those Thousand Island cruises.
No.
But your doctor said if you were too tired...
I know what he said, and if he had his way, I'd spend my last days looking out a hospital window at what? A parking lot? I'm not doing that, Earl, and I'm not taking any boat cruise. I have to think of your health. You'd never survive it, sailor boy.
Oh, that's a low blow.
Oh, I never did understand why you chose the Navy.
Well, it was my summers on the Rochester Ferry. I thought I'd earn my sea legs. But Lake Ontario ain't the Atlantic.
I practically got seasick reading your letters.
Oh, 3 years on a minesweeper. 3 miserable years. Redeemed by one spectacular leave.
Now that I won't forget in a hurry.
At the end of 1944, I managed to swing a transfer to a frigate. It was bigger than a minesweeper, and I thought that might ease things up in the stomach department. The frigate was heading across the Atlantic, so I got embarkation leave, 48 hours. With embarkation leave, it didn't matter if you lived in Saskatoon, you still got your 48 hours at home. The travel time there didn't count. Nevertheless, 2 days isn't much time when you're young and in love, and it's even less when my home was in Toronto, but my Dorothy was another 4 hours' drive away, down on the Niagara Peninsula, at Farmerette Camp.
You know, if it was weird that I chose the Navy, it was even stranger that you ever thought you could have had a career in agriculture. My lovely Farmerette.
I was being patriotic.
But picking peaches?
Oh, I know.
You were a city girl.
No, 22, and I'd never once been on a farm. Farms were something you drove by on your way to another city. And there I am, picking peaches 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, up and down ladders, my hands and arms black with pesticide, blistered from the sun. And at night, sleeping in a dorm built in the upper part of a barn, having to endure the giggling of 50 other girls, not one of whom knew the first thing about a car other than its color. Oh, I must have been out of my mind. I certainly was homesick.
For me?
For the cars. I was trying not to think of you too much. If I thought about you, I'd just start crying.
You never told me that.
I'd be up a ladder in the middle of a damn peach tree and I'd start. Well, you were going overseas. I just knew with your lousy luck there was a U-boat torpedo with your name on it. I couldn't bear to think about it. When you wrote to say you had embarkation leave, you know, I wasn't even so sure I wanted you to come visit. I was afraid I'd fall to pieces. Funny, eh? There I was, up in a tree, crying and thinking today was the day you said you'd show up, and every fiber in me was hoping you wouldn't. At the same time as every fiber wanted you there. I recognized the horn. A 39 Nash, no doubt about it. I pushed aside the branches and looked out. There you were, sitting in my dad's car out on the concession road, honking at an orchard full of farmerettes, confident that one of them would recognize your call.
Hey, I found you.
Stop the damn honking before the foreman hears.
Okay, okay. Mm. You smell like peaches.
Let's get out of here.
But don't you have
Never
to pick?
Never mind that. Let's go. Let's go see the fall.
It's like kissing a jar of peach preserves.
Oh, I can't help it.
It was a compliment. I like peaches. I love it on you.
Well, don't get too excited, because some of that's bug spray, too.
But it's bug spray on you, and that makes it the tastiest bug spray in the universe.
Is that what you've been learning in the Navy? Oh. All that Casanova stuff?
I've learned lots of valuable skills in the Navy. Gin rummy, rum and gin. Hey, when do you have to get back?
We're supposed to be in the dorm at 9.
It's 10.
I know. I'm not going back.
But you said they check.
To hell with Farmerette Camp. We've only got a day and a half. The girls will cover for me. And if they don't, well, so what? Earl?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go somewhere.
We are somewhere. We're in the most romantic spot in North America.
Actually, we're not.
What do you mean?
Oh, Lord, do I always have to ask everything?
What?
Let's get a room.
A motel room?
Yeah.
Why?
Why do you think?
But...
But what?
But we're not even engaged.
You could solve that in 10 seconds. Ask me, for God's sakes.
Oh. Oh! But wouldn't you rather ask me?
Earl! Oh,
but it's a tradition. You asked me on our first date. You asked me to go steady.
Oh, will you shut up and marry me?
That's two questions. Okay, okay. Yes and yes.
Oh, nuts.
What now?
There's no ring.
Sorry, if you told me you were going to propose...
You'll have to buy one in Halifax and mail it back to me. Or I'll just go into Burke's. Why don't I do that? That way I'll have the exact ring I want and the right size. As soon as I get out of Farmerette's, I'll go to Burke's, buy the ring, mail it to you, and you mail it back. Now, wait, that's ridiculous. I'll just buy it and send you the bill. Earl, let's not get a room.
But we're engaged. It's okay.
You have to save money for the ring. You can't be throwing money around like a drunken sailor, and I'm only making 22.5 cents an hour.
But just a minute ago...
I said if we got engaged, we could go to a motel, but we don't need a room. Not with this car. The seats convert, and just think, this way we'll have a view of the falls.
I eventually did get Dodo back to the camp, and to her great relief, the matron fired her on the spot. So we gathered up her things and headed back to Toronto. I shipped out in November, and the war ended a few months later, before that torpedo found me. In fact, the only injury I got in the war was a few bruises during the Halifax riot. A gang of sailors was trying to overturn a Chrysler Airflow. I felt compelled to intervene. I got home in October 45, and the following February, Dorothy and I got married in the parlor of her church. And in July of 46, we were back in her father's Nash, me at the wheel, and Dorothy moaning in the back seat.
Oh, can't you drive faster?
I'm breaking the speed limit.
You're going slow on purpose.
There's traffic, honey.
Oh, God. Earl, pull over.
We're nearly
there. Pull over!
You don't need to hear the pyrotechnics. The short version of what followed is, Dodo yelled some words I never knew she knew, and all of a sudden, there was Speedy. The first and only impulsive thing our daughter ever did, 2 blocks from the hospital. Okay, okay, I'll save you the math. We were married in February, and our daughter arrived in June. So now you know the other reason she's called Speedy. We had Franklin 3 years later. He managed to delay his arrival till we got to East York General. None of this backseat of the Nash business for Franklin. And now, Dodo was slumped beside me in an overheated Pacer wagon as we head down the 401 to Montreal. She slept for the last hour. That's a good thing, I think. We checked into the Queen Elizabeth. Dorothy was exhausted and could barely make it to our room. We had tickets for swimming that night. We didn't go, of course. Dorothy slept right till the next morning. And then there was Nadia Comăneci. The 14-year-old gymnast from Romania tripped down the balance beam and into the hearts of the world. She was so healthy, so in control of her body. Dodo smiled when Nadia received her perfect tens, and neither of us commented on the two empty seats just over the gymnast's shoulder. They were Dodo's and mine, and we weren't there. We saw it all on our hotel room TV. We got back to Toronto the next day, and Dodo went straight to another royal institution this time, the Princess Margaret. She declined quickly after that, and in 2 weeks, she was gone. I can't talk about any of that. The day after Dodo died, I woke up angry. I'm not an angry man. You've been listening to me for 4 weeks now, and you never heard me get angry. But I was angry that day. Angry at the whole goddamn world. And every goddamn person in it. Anyone who was tripping down balance beams or reading books or selling cars or repairing them. Everyone who was alive. I went to the only place I knew where I could get comfort. The showroom of Dorothy Curran AMC. But even there, I would find no peace.
There he is now.
He looks really rough.
Daddy, where have you been? I've been worried sick.
Speedy, how many cars in the lot?
What?
It's a simple enough question. Dan, you must know. How many cars do we have sitting out there?
125. 50.
Gas them up.
Sir?
You heard me. Fill their tanks. Every last one of them. Gas them all up.
Daddy, what?
Speedy, I want you to get on the phone. I want you to phone your old high school, tell them I want to see every damn student there who's got a driver's license and wants to earn a few extra bucks. And then I want you to phone the car clubs. And I'm going to get you a list of your mother's old customers. Phone them, too.
To fill every car is going to take a lot of gas.
Do it!
Yes, sir.
Daddy, what's going on?
We are going to have a cortege, Speedy. We are going to have the biggest goddamn cortege in the history of this city. Now, let's get phoning.
I'm not an angry man. And sure enough, I didn't stay angry for long. When the first high school students began streaming in the doors next day, and I handed them the keys for their Pacers and Matadors, and for the lucky few, Jeeps, well, the anger started ebbing. And when the American Motors Car Club people showed up in their Ramblers and Hudsons and vintage Nashes, well, what little was left of that anger began changing to grief. And then 100 of Dorothy's clients came, satisfied customers, because Dorothy's always were. And when they arrived, well, the tears started, so that I could barely see to drive myself. But we headed out. A line of 300 cars, old, new, some with faulty air conditioning, some being driven badly because the students were trying them out for the first time, and others driven well because their owners loved them. All of those cars comprising the steel and glass and chrome bits of Dodo's and my shared history. All of them rumbling in a convoy down Eglinton towards Mount Pleasant. First the police escort, and then me in one of our new Pacer wagons, with Dodo's coffin sticking out the rear and the car covered with the pennants from our car lot, those flapping plastic flags that had always been music to my wife's ears. Oh, that was a great thing. And if a couple of students dinged some bumpers along the way, and if my son-in-law Dan, the worst driver in Christendom, backed into the Eaton Mausoleum at Mount Pleasant, well, none of that mattered. We were seeing Dodo off, and we were seeing her out in the only kind of style she would ever have approved. 20 years have passed, and I still have little conversations with Dodo. Most times, they're just in my head, but if I'm down in the bomb shelter, the Speedy bunker, I can roll the door shut and talk to her aloud. Or if I'm sitting by her gravestone, I can talk to her here, too. I ask her advice. She gives it. It was always thus. Even at the end, she was giving advice. I won't tell you the last things we said to each other. That's too private and would only embarrass you. But I can tell you what Dodo said to me the second last day when she was still trying to boss me.
Earl, we need to talk about business.
stove. Not now.
Yes, this is important. Remember what I said on the drive to Montreal. You have to sell the dealership.
Okay. Okay, I will.
I'm serious. Don't just say okay to please me. You have to do it. We've had a good run with American Motors, but it's time to get out while we can. And I have one more piece of advice for you now. Listen up.
Okay.
Are you listening?
Shoot.
It's about the future. It's our best bet. For you and Speedy and Daniel and Franklin. Earl, I've seen the future. Can you hear me?
I hear you. You've seen the future?
Earl, it's Toyota.
Toyota?
Toyota.
I'm Earl. Earl Hughes. I used to sell cars. That's me, leaning against a rust bucket 87 Matador, talking to a hunk of stone. Apologizing yet again to Dorothy for not taking her advice. Because we didn't sell the dealership. And we didn't jump to Toyota. We did eventually do something else. We got out of cars entirely. I don't think Dodo's ever going to forgive me for that one. No matter how often I come here to explain. Okay. I'm going to talk to her a bit more now. In private. And then I'm going to drive home. I'll be back next week. Honest. I'll be okay. You go away now.
September Song by Dave Carley, the fourth in our six-part series, Test Drive. This episode of Test Drive is dedicated to Hector Dupuis, a car man and a car lover. In the cast, Gordon Pinsent was Earl, Jeff Bowes was young Earl, Deanne de Gruyter was Dorothy, Catherine Fitch was Speedy, and Andrew Tarbutt was Dan. The associate producer was Colleen Woods, the recording engineer Wayne Richards, sound effects by Matt Wilcott. Special thanks to our historical consultants, John Langley and Ralph Valenciano. Test Drive was produced and directed in Toronto by Linda Grierson, the executive producer, James Roy. You can order this drama on CD. The cost is $21 for one episode, $40 for the entire series of six. Call 416-205-5966 for information. That's all the time we have for the roundup for this afternoon at CBC Vancouver. I'm Bill Richardson. Tomorrow on the program, Andrea Hunter will be here with her hit list for this past year, the most requested music on the roundup, as well the conversation with David Conway. He's an English character who spends a lot of time taking photographs for the Find a Grave website. Should be interesting. So that's tomorrow on the roundup. See you all then.